G&D coming your way live on 106.7 The Fan on this Wednesday, July 31st, 2024. It is a mad dash and a sprint for your pals Grant and Danny today as we take you up to 3:10 and matinee Nats baseball in Arizona against the Diamondbacks. Thank you for making this show part of your day. Danny, top of the afternoon.
What do you say, buddy? We got to hurry. The show's already 5% over, for goodness sakes. We got to get right to it. It's a great sports day, by the way. The Nationals came in second last night. They gave up a couple of touchdowns and a field goal. Ooh, I was able to go to bed on the early side.
Neil Rackers of the old school Cardinals booted a 57-yarder in that 17-0 loss.
Like Neil Lomax was involved, too, somehow. Old NFC East opponents. Team USA Hoops plays this afternoon, right as you and I are getting off air. That'll be fun. Before we give way to the Nationals, we have a good show. We'll do it quickly. I got a little tiny guessing game I'd love to start the show with. It's a wee guessing game. Normally we would draw this out, have a little fun with it. We'll go around the room. We'll do it very quickly. Darius, at your leisure, little guessing game music.
I always enjoy a good guessing
game. You don't know, the three of you, and if Ryan never comes back, the three of you don't know what I did this morning. This is something that a lot of doubt about. I didn't think it was going to happen. Not many people did. I didn't know that I would ever do this, but I did it this morning. What did I do?
You went for a run.
That's a great guess. Darius, what do you got?
I'm going to assume you played a sport with someone relatively famous.
Another very good guess. Grant, I'll give you one more guess before I give a hint, and then I'll let Ryan guess too. So far, we're zoning in. It's pretty good so far.
This morning, Danny did something he didn't think he would ever do. You went and saw Deadpool in theaters.
Life is a mystery. Everyone must stand alone.
No.
Yes. Boom goes the dynamite. I saw it. 9:40 a.m. showing.
No way.
I found a cinema that was showing Deadpool and Wolverine at 9:40 a.m.
Where did you see that?
It's a place called Cinema Arts in Fairfax.
Let's go.
Drop the kids off. First of all, you nailed it. Second guess, too. Drop the kids off at their camp for the week. And I was like, you know, let me putz around and see if I can find something. Because most of the showings, it's like 10:30 is the early show. 11, it's like, well, it puts us a time crunch. I don't want to do that. I saw the 9:40 a.m. showing. By the way, they cut to the chase. One preview. It was an M. Night Shyamalan film coming out with Josh Hartnett.
I've seen that trailer.
And that was it. And they're like, here's the movie. I'm like, I can't remember that. I can't remember that anything less than 15 trailers.
You got some kind of a special showing because before my Deadpool, the movie actually started like 27 minutes after the penciled in start time. And we went and saw Twisters, if you remember, like last week, boys. And I counted 9 trailers.
9:44 a.m. I had a trailer for the M. Night Shyamalan movie and a Google Pixel ad.
All I know about the M. Night Shyamalan movie is it's going to suck. Back to you, Danny.
I tell you what, there is no, this is a quick side before we get to do Deadpool shtick. There is no greater gap between how good the trailers look for movies and how bad they actually are than the M. Night Shyamalan situations. Like, Sixth Sense was a bolt into the upper tank, all-time great movie.
Tough. Once every 6 or 7 movies, he hits a home run.
Yep.
But he's got a lot of Joey Gallo in that.
There's so many whiffs.
Swing and a miss. How great was it?
Really, really fun.
You loved it.
It's really fun. The thing that makes it so special, and if you haven't seen it, it's butt fun. That's all you can ask for. That they do a thing, that which I love this series and I love Deadpool so much, they're able to do a thing where they make fun of what they're about to do. Right? They make fun of the genre. All the complaints that people have, all the irritations that people have about Marvel movies or whatever, they go on to do it, but they're aware that they're doing it. So they make fun of it beforehand. All the things that happen in the film were all foreshadowed when he's breaking the fourth wall and telling you how it's going to go. It was super fun. I thought it was a little busy, like in terms of a movie, you know, good, not great. I don't care about any of that stuff. It was so much fun. Yeah, I had a great time.
We don't need to apply the same things we use on The Departed to Deadpool and Wolverine.
Exactly.
It was a good time, though.
I had a great time at 9:40 this morning.
And without getting into any details, there is a scene, the one in the house, where it's just like a Royal Rumble and people's music are hitting and they're walking down to the ring. You were probably an empty theater, which maybe took away from it a little
bit.
No,
it was me and about 2 dozen retirees. That's when they see movies.
So
I just found that out.
You didn't get any ovations or claps?
No, they weren't a clapping sort.
So when I saw each of those reveals, we'll call them, big ovations popping the room.
That's when the, again, no, I'm not spoiling anything. Yeah. That's after the infighting, and then they're taken to the house with the little pool in the middle.
Yeah.
You're talking about, and then one by one, people come in. You're like, exactly. What?
There's a lot.
The one, what? I still can't believe.
I agree.
Not the one Ryan spoiled, but no. You know exactly what I'm talking about, Darius.
I do.
The third one, I'm kind of going, okay, I suppose. That's adorable. I guess that person was free. But the one, I went, no.
Did you catch the line that he said from the original movie?
Yes, I did.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, I did.
Steam me up.
Yeah.
Big moment.
And the look, and there'll never be another blank, and then Wade looks at
it. We're teetering on the brink.
That's fine.
We are teetering on the brink.
No, we're not.
Getting yelled at by Nate Davis
we're
10
not.
Years from now.
We're not Harris Teeter.
So we're
going
to leave it here, but I'm proud of you.
Sorry.
I want you to know. And I can't wait to the commercial break so we can get to the bottom of some things. Attaboy. Byron Pringle has been brought back to the Commanders. The last time the Commanders signed Byron Pringle, if you remember, 1 year ago, we ranked our favorite flavors of Pringles because back then we were an immature radio show. Back then, I guess, we didn't take ourselves seriously enough to just break down a football move. So I figured today we could rank our favorite flavors of Pringles in honor of Byron Pringle being signed by the Washington Commanders. So, Danny, your number one Pringles flavor is?
The original, the OG, the regular, plain old, you want to call it run of the mill. It's not. It's just Pringles, man.
That's
Pringles.
A red can.
The red can.
Pringles original. That is also my number one. My number two. Favorite type of Pringle is going to be the Memphis barbecue Pringle. This was a slightly redder tube or more dark red. I'd say almost like a candy apple red, something like that. Memphis barbecue Pringles. Very, very delicious.
Number two for me, cheddar and sour cream Pringle.
Very
cheddar
good.
And sour cream Pringle.
High on my list. Might even be my number three, to be honest with you. That's a great Pringle. That was the greenish yellow can, I
greenish
believe,
yellow, yep.
In the Pringles. All right, what do you got for number three?
Number three, this is rogue. This is not going to be on your list at all. They did a little spicy effort.
Yeah.
I want to say it was like a habanero or habanerito, or I can't remember what it was called, but it was very spicy, and I liked it a lot. It was a good palate sort of departure Pringle.
I'm going to go sour cream for my number three. I don't think there's another one. They did a bunch of them, extra hot.
Yep.
They did a jalapeno, dill pickle, honey mustard, out on all those pizza Pringles. No, thank you.
You didn't like the pizza Pringle?
I was out on
it. It was like eating combos, but Pringles.
Not for your boy.
Oh, I made my list.
So those are our top three cans of Pringles in honor of Byron Pringle being signed. Why do you think they brought him back? Remember, it's easy to say, oh, well, he was here last year. He knows the offense. They know him. It's an entirely new front office.
You don't know this offense, yeah.
An entirely new coaching staff, and because of that, an entirely new offense. So the fact that he was here last year and played in 17 games and caught 14 balls and went for $160 through the air, none of that helps him here. Why is Washington bringing him back right now?
Somebody should be concerned. I don't know who. I don't know who it is, but one of the guys that we have come to count on or depend on or think is going to be on the roster because they've been good in the preseason or caught a pass against Dallas and did the scarn that time or whatever, I think might be a little bit of danger. I don't know if it's a Dax Milne. I don't know if it's Dalmy Brown. I don't know if it's Jamison Crowder. I don't know exactly. But I think they saw enough to go, you know what? We need someone in that tier. Maybe could play some special teams as well. That fourth or fifth, maybe sixth guy on the depth chart.
Supposedly, Crowder's flashed a bunch in practices. Like behind McLaurin, he's been the second most visible, noticeable playmaker. So he's had a pretty good camp. Not to say he's a lock to make the roster by any means. They also are somewhat light, it seems like, as far as proven punt returners go, and he gets a lot of the first reps there. So I'd like to think Jamison Crowder is going to be on the team, and after he played pretty well down the stretch last year, remember he had a great diving catch in the end zone for a touchdown. Mm. He actually had some good moments. I think he's in. If you're looking at roster locks, you got to go McLaurin, Dotson, McCaffrey. That's probably it. Beyond that, though, the competition for receivers 4 through 6 on the roster comes down to, if we're going to throw Pringle into the mix now, Pringle, Dyami Brown, Alameda Zaccheaus, Mitchell Tinsley, Dax Milne, Jamison Crowder, and then the deep roster hopefuls, bubble guys like Bryson Tremaine from Stanford, who was a college free agent last year.
Kaz Allen, who we heard a lot about last year.
College free agent last year at UCLA. Damir Bird they signed, who spent some time in San Francisco this offseason. used to play for the Falcons years ago. He'd be a deep roster hopeful, I would call him. But if they're going to keep six right now, what's your guess? Beyond McLaurin, Dotson, McCaffrey, who do you think would be the other three? And do they keep kids or do they just go super veteran heavy with their young quarterback?
I would lean more towards veteran heavy, because if these kids were, you know, blossoming prospects that were highly touted draft picks or something like that, like, to me, Dotson's their kid, if that makes any sense. Like,
that's true.
Dotson, McCaffrey,
Brown,
are the young guys.
I'm thinking De'Ami Brown's like the youngest of those other guys. He's 24 years old, but he's going into his fourth year.
Yeah.
He's not a kid, really.
If I had to guess, and this is early, it's probably irresponsible to do so, but here we go. I think Pringle. I think Zacchaeus, who has probably the most pelts on the wall. I think he had like a 600 or 700 yard season at one point. And then maybe Crowder, because you mentioned that punt return type element.
So they go all vets.
Yeah.
I'm going to say McLaurin, Dotson, McCaffrey, and then my last three would be Alamide Zacchaeus, who's twitchy and quick. We had Ben Standing on a couple days ago. He said he's really been impressed. He's not a big guy by any means. Standing said he's 5'8". If he's listed at that, which he is, that's really surprising to me. I thought he was a little bigger than that. But I'll go Zacchaeus. I'll say Crowder makes it, and with the other spot, I'm still going to go De'Ami Brown against my better judgment. So then you go, why did they bring in Pringle? It's a long training camp, right?
Yep.
And you need bodies and you need competition. And he probably has a legitimate chance to make it if things don't go well in the preseason for Zacchaeus or Brown or Crowder. But I would not want to be Mitchell Tinsley, who made the roster and stayed on the roster, I think, all last year without much chance on game day. I wouldn't want to be Dax Milne, who's 3 years removed from being a seventh round pick. And I probably wouldn't want to be Allen or you know, Bryson Tremaine or Damier Bird, although the practice squad still seems likely for at least a couple of those names.
Yeah, with or without, you know, Byron Pringle or other numbers to kind of gum up the works. Yeah, I don't know why. I mean, I know I'm ascribing my own kind of proclivities and evaluations of the roster
you
onto
also
this.
Have Pringle on the roster, but 24 hours ago
was not
on the team at all.
And my thinking, because I'm trying to put myself in their headspace. We're going to learn so much about them this year, talking about the front office. We got a decent sort of a sample here with this first draft go around and then free agency and the like. But I think when they see a problem, this is my early read on them. When they see an issue or they see something they need to shore up, they have a certain philosophy. You could go get a 21-year-old. You could go get a 22-year-old off someone else's practice squad. They didn't. They got a veteran. I mean, it's not like he's 35. It's not like you went and got Julio Jones or, you know, someone off their couch, but they went and got someone that's been around a few different systems, even someone that was here last year. I think they thought we need some more veteran kind of help in that room to maybe get paired with some of our young, really important players, a.k.a. McCaffrey, Dotson, and then by kind of transitivity, their quarterback, Jaden Daniels.
They just have so many veterans already on offense and even at wide receiver. Terry, Jahan has been here long enough that he can grab a face mask or he can slap a butt and say, hey, man, do it this way. Even Zacchaeus, who's new here, he's been around for a long time. You know, Jamison Crowder, who's better traveled than that guy? I mean, he's got more pages punched in the NFL passport than most people do. So it's not like they had to have just a presence. My guess is when the staff, whether that was Peters himself or somebody else, watched last year's tape, they said, I think Byron Pringle's every bit as good as a bunch of the guys we have in here. I mean, is Bryson Tremaine or Damier Bird or Dax Milne, are they better than Byron Pringle? We know that the last staff didn't think that because one of them was up and active and targeted on game days and the other guys weren't.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they see it the same way. But, I mean, look, the bottom line on wide receiver for this team, they have to get huge production from the big boys. You got to keep McLaurin healthy. You know he's going to produce. He always does. There's very few players in this league as consistent as Terry McLaurin. And McLaurin's a guy, it doesn't matter who your quarterback is. If it's a buster like me or you, or if it's a mediocre NFL jag like Taylor Heinicke, or if it's a star, and unfortunately I don't have an example to use yet because he hasn't played with one, but let's say Jaden Daniels gets there, you're going to get 70-plus catches, you're going to get 1,000-plus yards, you're going to get a lot of plays made by McLaurin. Outside of him, Dotson's got to break out. We've talked about this a ton.
It's essential.
Yesterday at this time, Luke McCaffrey, they took in the top 100. You can't just park him for a year and say, eventually he can help us. When you're picked where he was, you got to get something out of him this year.
Yeah, when you had cap space and you had multiple draft picks and you had assets to improve that room, the guys that you did select, they didn't do anybody high. They didn't do a first rounder. Not that they would have because they were picking Jaden Daniels, but they didn't go in the second round. They didn't go into the first. They didn't trade back in. They took a defensive tackle, a cornerback, and then kind of an H-back tight end hybrid role in the second round. Their top four picks were not at that spot. They didn't spend in free agency at that spot. So who you do select, or then by transitivity, kind of elevate in terms of Dotson, say, no, we don't have a weakness there. We got a strength. Those guys have to come through.
I just hate being so average at that position. Now, where everybody else is really looking for playmakers, mm-hmm. a weapon, dynamicism, that's not a word, dynamic athletes.
Yep.
Everybody's looking to get more explosive and looking for that wiggle and that twitch and just an X receiver who can beat people and take over a game. And they go, let's go get McCaffrey. Let's bring in Zacchaeus and Pringle and Crowder and let's see where we're at. I just wish they really were more aggressive at going and getting a playmaker.
100%.
You watch receivers on Netflix and the way that the coaches talk about how different their lives are as play callers, as play designers, because they've got badasses like Justin Jefferson. And I know it's hard to find one of the best in the league. It doesn't necessarily have to be that way. But we talked a lot about the possibility of trading for Brandon Ayuk. There were other receivers available throughout the offseason. They were at least limitedly interested. They were curious because we know that they reached out to San Fran. They were one of the teams reportedly that talked to the 49ers. They certainly didn't have the conviction to get it done.
I would understand that if you're the Cowboys or the Saints, the Chiefs, the Rams, et cetera, where you have a veteran group with a bunch of big contracts and you're up against it, right? But this, to me, is one of those, you use the resources. You've got all the cap space. This is one of those times where you can throw money at a problem. You can throw resources at a problem. And I think their votes of confidence, their lack of action, scream that they believe in the group that they've got assembled. Now, making a move on the periphery, a.k.a. bringing in Byron Pringle, he's not taking reps from Dotson or McCaffrey or McLaurin, obviously. He's there to take reps from the fifth or sixth guy.
Yeah.
But so it's an around-the-edge type thing. But it showed that they didn't think they needed to majorly upgrade. And something that I just don't see it the same way, but they're obviously smarter than me.
Well, I saw that Crowder is even getting more reps as a top three guy at times than even McCaffrey early in camp. But what does that mean? Yep. Jaden Daniels is splitting reps with Marcus Mariota.
Which I'm fine with. That's great. That's great they're doing that.
What does anything really mean in terms of early camp play time? I keep wanting to come back to Deami Brown to say that I'd rather have a 24-year-old who was drafted where he was. Remember, the 82nd pick. Think about that, by the way. Third-round pick. Not a late third-round pick either.
Oh, yeah.
But he was picked in the third round. He's going into his fourth year. But his numbers are worse than you think. At some point, you'd force your way onto the field and get some touches. 12 catches in year one, 5 catches in year two, 12 catches in year three.
Breakout.
And this is not a Josh Doctson, I was hurt thing. That guy's been up and active. He's played in all but 2 games a season, basically. He's missed 4 total games in 3 years, and he has not yet caught 13 balls in a season. So at some point, it's different coaches, it's different offenses. This will be his third coordinator. You got to imagine there's something more to it than just they don't know how good he is.
Now, every team missed on these guys, so I'm not just picking on Washington. But it's always just fun and a great exercise to look at who went nearby. Who went a few picks later? Nico Collins went 7 picks later. Isn't that fun? Isn't that a fun thing to think about? And who went like 15, 20 picks later? Amon-Ra St. Brown went even later than Deami Brown. I would rather have, and this is a bold statement, I would rather have Amon-Ra St. Brown than Deami Brown.
Not me.
I'm talking about for football now.
For football?
Yeah.
Yeah, not me.
Oh, well.
I think it builds character to have Deami.
Isn't that nice? It builds some toughness.
Exactly.
Some stick-to-itiveness.
Some fan character to go the Deami Brown route. And sometimes he does that like 80s look where he has sideburns. That's pretty cool.
That is neat.
Amon-Ra doesn't do that.
No. He just catches a ton of passes for yards and touchdowns.
16 targets, 13 catches, .157 and a tutty. That's not that interesting to me.
Why is it so boring?
I like my wide receiver not hosting a podcast.
Good point.
I prefer that.
Yeah. Amon-Ra St. Brown. You might get touchdowns and you might get 15 targets and you might get 10 catches a week. But him and his brother are going to do a podcast.
I'm not even doing a bit. I think Amon-Ra St. Brown had a month where he outproduced Deami Brown's whole career.
I'm positive of that.
29 catches, 476 yards, and 3 touchdowns. I think he has like multiple months where he's gone over that.
No, I would bet $1,000 that that's the case. He's had probably half of his career catches in a game at one point.
Yeah.
How many career catches for Diami? You're saying 29?
That's 29 for
okay, so
476.
He's never had 15 in a week, but I think he's probably at a dozen.
Yes, he has.
So over I would say there has been a 2-game stretch where he out-caught him and a 3-game stretch where he out-yarded
him. Out-gained him.
But no, the Lions can have him. He's just very likable and really smart and a great player. And
good for them.
I'm not interested in that.
Good for those guys. Losers.
Frank Danny on the fan. NFL's going to use Hawkeye technology for line-to-gain rulings in the preseason. What could this mean? What will we be seeing starting tomorrow in preseason games as far as the tech used in officiating? Let's talk about that next on G&D. Grant and Danny on the fan. So proud of Danny Ruye. Went and saw Deadpool Wolverine in
Neato
the morning.
Gang.
We thought he wouldn't. We thought it was going to be a home viewing 3 months from now. This guy stepped up to the plate. Me, Darius, and Danny getting to the bottom of things in commercial breaks. Darius, we could speak freely again. We don't have to hide all of our feelings.
It feels good to not have to beat around the bush.
It's very nice.
I've been to earlier showings, if you count like the start of a 24-hour time clock. Does that make sense? Like, I've been to midnight showings or 3 a.m. showings. That's the earliest in the course of a regular day I've ever seen a movie.
I didn't think 9:40 a.m. really happened.
There aren't many. I found one.
I'm proud of you.
Me and the blue hairs just hanging out watching Deadpool.
The NFL is moving closer to replacing the chain gang, which is something many of us have wanted for a long time. Because let's call a spade a spade. There are so many times in an NFL game where we just have to suspend reality and any kind of belief that everything is being officiated correctly. When you see some of the spots, guy's knee goes down, someone just eyeballs it and puts the ball a yard forward or a yard back, and instead of a 3rd and 4, it's a 3rd and 2.5. And we, for a long time, Danny, couldn't do much about that, really, mm-hmm. as consumers. But now, look around at the technology in sports, whether it's in the swimming pools in the Olympics, where to the 1,000th of a second, a fingertip on a wall can be monitored, or baseball, where they're soon going to have an electronic strike zone. The Hawkeye technology used for all the data that teams get on horizontal and vertical movement and rotations of a baseball, RPM, spin rate. We can just measure things in ways that we weren't able to before. And there is now tech available, should the NFL choose to use it, the Hawkeye technology to determine where the nose of the ball was on the football field at any given moment. Did the team score? Did the ball cross the goal line? Was it a first down? And until now, the NFL, Danny, has just neglected to use any of this help for their officials. That ends tomorrow in the Hall of Fame game with a preseason exhibition for Hawkeye technology in officiating.
This is a wonderful first step. We're getting close to the thing that I have desired since I was a child. Since I remember a running back, I don't remember who it was, being knocked down, but reaching out the ball, and then the referee just kind of walked over and sort of split the difference. And I asked my dad, why is that happening like that? He was clearly further ahead. And he goes, my dad just kind of shrugged his shoulders. And I've never been satisfied with that.
I like your very specific example of the thing that annoys all of us.
Yeah, as a little kid, I was like, I don't understand. I'm looking to this adult to explain this to me, and he had no explanation. And we just watch the games, and we just shrug our shoulders. When the ball's into somebody's left hand, and the right foot goes out of bounds, and they move it to where the right foot was. Or they just move it ahead. Or the bad spots that seem to get lost in the flow of the game because somebody's moving back to the line of scrimmage, and they just flip it, and that guy's a foot to the left of where the original spot was, and they just kind of put it down, and here we go, it's from there.
Or on the sideline, you're diving and reaching out, and you're like, felt like that was a couple yards off. My favorite is punts. The way they just walk up the chalk after a punt went real high and out of bounds, and they're just like, they keep walking. You could play music under it, and they're moving from the 20 to the 25 to the 30 to the 35, and they just like stopped at the 37. They're completely guessing. They have no idea where the ball went out of bounds.
I want you to admit, you don't know where it went out of bounds. You have a good idea, decent idea, within maybe 5-6 yards, but that's, a huge percentage of the football field.
Sometimes you might be within a yard or two. Sometimes you might be within 5 yards. I guarantee there have been times where based on the way the ball was punted or maybe someone was out of position or wasn't looking at the right thing for a little while, where the spot was just off by 12, 13 yards on a punt.
So this is the first step. So what it's going to be used for now, as I understand it, is Grant Paulson's my side judge, right? Darius goes down with the football. The ball is spotted.
I'm still spotting the ball with Darius.
You're still spotting the
human
ball.
Human element.
Yeah, you're still spotting the ball wherever it is that you deem appropriate.
Okay, so I think the spot was the 26. Let's say by definition, really the guy got to the 27, and you got to get to the 27 and a half for a first down, but I'm going to spot it at the 26 and change.
Then we're not doing anything about it. Then I don't think it's being used the way I've read this and understand it. I could be wrong. But the way it sounds to me is, if you spot it, say the flip the scenario, if the guy actually went down to the 26, but you spot it at the 27 and a half, and it's a first down, Hawkeye buzzes, and what that's going to preclude us from is the referee blowing his whistle, doing the quick jumping jack thing over his head where he blows the play dead, motions to the sideline guys. They come running out. One guy's pinching a chain. The other two guys are holding on to these weird sticks, and they find the hash mark, and then they measure it, and the one guy uses an index card sometimes or not. We're getting rid of that. That's the end of that.
That, to me, is still the poster child moment for how silly the spot game is currently, whether it was Hockley or someone else, one of the officials. You know who it was, I think? Might have been Gene Steratore, who now does all the TV stuff.
Use the index card?
For CBS. And he literally took out a card out of his pants, out of his back pocket, you know, that he uses to write down changes or ejections or whatever. And he tried to determine if the ball was past the chain with the card. And that's how you know there's got to be a better way.
We've come so far. I get how we start on, like, muddy municipal fields that, like, used to be baseball fields and are kind of being converted. And we don't have it. There's too much. We have come so far. Everybody's going so fast. We need the technology. So what I want is this to be so wildly successful that we go, we can't live without this. Now we're going to give the machine more, which I know is the plot of every sci-fi movie. I know every Terminator is based on this, but I think it's fine because we're just spotting footballs. What I want is an end to the, it was kind of right here. I don't want any more kind ofs. I want it exactly. I want that technology implemented so when that knee touches the nose of the ball and there's an invisible red line and a human being's hand, the only service they're performing is to place it exactly where the machine says.
Gary Brantley is the guy's name who's in charge of some of this stuff for the NFL. He said, we're in the installation phase for all of our stadiums, really getting them calibrated and up to date. NFL's VP, Chief Information Officer. We're just really getting to a place where this system is as accurate as possible and really calibrating across all our major stadiums. Now, baseball's way ahead in this regard because they've been using Hawkeye and this technology in big league and minor league parks. It's obviously done differently. You're monitoring pitches and batted ball velocities and things like that, whereas this is going to be way more detailed in terms of yard markers and exactly where the nose of the ball was. We have multiple stadiums with multiple dimensions inside those stadiums with different age, so we're really just going through the installation of putting in the infrastructure and making sure these cameras are installed. And that's really what it is. It's, I don't know how to describe it, but it's like triangulated cameras that basically spotted all over the facility combined together, paint this panoramic image that then allows you to track everything to the quarter of a millimeter, right?
Yeah. And
it's edgetronic, a camera almost impact. And it's incredible what it's done for baseball and just nerdery and the ability to learn about what's happening on a ball field.
And so you know those replays where you have multiple different angles, right? And you go, okay, from this angle, you could see the ball is out, but you can't see his knee. And then on the other angle, you could see his knees touching the ground, but when is the ball out? And they act like it's this big mystery. When they don't have timestamps, like they don't have the instant where if you freeze it on one frame where you go, okay, at you know 13 minutes, 17.416893 seconds, the ball is out of his hands, no longer in his possession. Then you fast forward to that exact same time on the other angle, and you go, his knee was not down, so therefore it's a fumble, or it's not. We act like that's beyond us. It shouldn't be. It shouldn't be this weird mystery where you're sitting there under the little tent and you're staring at a small camera communicating with some people in New York. We have way more technology than that to be able to figure out exactly when, where, why, and how. This has been lacking forever, that panoramic 360 to always have a camera there where you go, oh, well, there are too many people. We can't see the ball. What? So we're just guessing when billions are on the line? Pound sand with that. More of this immediately.
Yeah. For those of you that hate the technology infiltrating the game, here's a pebble. There's a parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
Go start kicking.
Write me a report.
I don't know what to tell you other than it's coming. It helps. It makes these games more accurately officiated. And while it changes the game that you know and you love, it doesn't make it worse. And I think you're going to find that out. A lot of people hated the idea of the pitch clock in Major League Baseball. I'm sorry that games move quicker and have become, in a lot of ways, a better viewing experience. Here's a quote from Neil Manowitz, Sony's president. Sony is behind the technology with the Hawkeye, I guess. We're reducing a significant amount of time, 40 seconds for each time of use, that basically is making the game that much more impactful. He goes on to say, and then also the system is accurate down to less than half an inch, which is incredibly, incredibly accurate. Hopefully, the fans appreciate the objective view, or at least half the fans each play will appreciate it. Joking about the fact that someone's going to be angry when their team didn't get the yardage needed to move the sticks. But we will see this in the preseason. Hopefully, we get to see it in a Commanders game. They've got three of them coming up starting end of next week, and we will discuss it after the first time we see it. The Bears got a big extension done at their camp. The Patriots, for I think the eighth time this offseason, extended one of their players. Where is our Sam Cosmi money? Let's pay the right guard who's coming to his own as a star. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Want to get to an NFL extension and a discussion on when we'll get an extension for the best young commander worthy of paying in just a couple of moments. Welcome back to Grant and Danny on the Fan. I just saw this story today, though. A missing scuba diving couple was found alive after 38 hours at sea with no life vests. Think about that.
Oh, my God.
This is a crazy story. And I'm not trying to joan on these people, but it doesn't look like they're like the best scuba divers in the world. I mean, they look like just kind of normal people.
Just regular people.
That went scuba diving. Maybe they're pretty good at it, but they don't look like they train.
38 hours?
38 hours. I'll give you some of the details here really quickly. So a missing scuba diving couple ended up separated from the group that they were with. Nathan and Kim Maker of Oklahoma are their names. They were part of a group of 16 people that were scuba diving off the coast of Texas. Bad weather forced everyone back to the boat. I guess they blow a whistle. They go, mm-hmm. Hey, weather's getting worse. Get back here. They're all hanging on to some type of safety line, and a huge swell comes, engulfs them, and they get knocked off the safety line. And the rest of the diving party stays on.
Oh, my God. It's like the plot of The Martian.
Pretty much. And by the way, that feeling has to be
the worst. Unimaginable.
This is how they described it. Think about the just let the anxiety set in.
Let it wash over you.
The boat was getting smaller and smaller and smaller until it was completely out of sight, Nathan told Good Morning America. Eventually, the couple found themselves in the real-life version of open water, which, if you haven't seen it, doesn't end well, apparently. But the married couple realized they were getting really cold. The water was too cold, so they had to swim to warm their body temperature. And I guess every once in a while, they would just have to swim to warm themselves up so that they didn't get too cold in the water. 38 hours went by with no life vest in the middle of the open sea.
I mean, oh my God.
Around 1 a.m. last Friday morning, Kim spotted a Coast Guard search plane that was off in the distance. Fortunately, because it was at nighttime, she was able to take out a small flashlight and began flashing SOS. Their worst fears that the plane may not have noticed them quickly went away when out of nowhere, a speedboat came and rescued them in a movie-like scenario. Just out of the corner of our eyes, this speedboat comes streaming in, and all of a sudden, I can hear the voices of Coast Guard guys.
First of all, oh my God. Second of all, you know how to do SOS?
Of course not. But if I was out in the water,
you might learn
with scuba diving people, 16 at a time. That might come up in the lessons at some point.
I mean, forever ago, I was in Hawaii with my dad, and we went snorkeling. For almost 10 seconds, I didn't know where the group was. That's the most scared I've ever been.
That is petrifying.
They were just around the corner of this one rock. But like it was, I was like, oh my God, open water. This is it. I'm going to be food for the barracudas.
Not really related, but yeah. I'll try to top that for a second, if I may. We took our kids to a little like petting zoo place. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter. There was like 3 minutes total where I didn't know where my daughter was. And I became Hugh Jackman in Prisoners. I was just running around screaming at people. And she just didn't tell us and like walked one like playground over. Yeah. It was like going down a slide.
Mm-hmm.
But I just like went and positioned myself at the front door like no one's leaving with her, you know? And I was going crazy. My wife was like very calm and like, please relax. She's right around here somewhere. I was losing it.
Yeah.
Heart beating out of my chest.
Now do that in the ocean.
Exactly.
For 2 days.
38 hours. Are you kidding me?
Can you imagine?
So tip of the cap. When I saw a picture of these people, again, I'm not trying to joan, but they kind of look like me.
Well, I'm saying they're not like, that's not like world-class Jacques Cousteau, I live in the water type folks. They're just like, this is a cool thing we're doing on vacation. What?
Unfathomable. All right. Extensions. DJ Moore got paid. He got over $100 million from the Bears. They lock him up. He's the latest guy to get an extension. And the Patriots, again, they have spent the entire offseason paying their own. The Patriots have made deals with now 8 different players in-house that they've locked up since the start of the offseason, which is pretty incredible. And tip of the cap to that front office to evaluate the guys you want to keep and then throw money at them. Moore, 4 years, $110 million, $82.6 million in guarantees. I ask you, Danny, where's our Sam Cosmi deal? And do you think he gets one before the start of the season? By all accounts, he's become one of the best guards in football. He has now played 3 years going into his fourth and final year of his contract. So if they want to lock him up tonight, they could do it. He's 25. I feel like the sooner the better because he's only going to be getting more and more credit around the league now. He's in the cool club. I'm not really sure what we're waiting for. They got a lot of money this year. They've got plenty of money in the future, very little on the books beyond this season. It seems like they're a prime candidate to lock up a player, and Cosmi's waiting in the wings.
Yeah, I'm wondering, because I haven't heard word one about it. Like, the only people that I've heard mention this are us. Now, maybe someone else has talked about it, and they deserve credit for it. But I don't know. I wonder what this group thinks of him. You know what I mean? Because I know he was the previous regime's. I evaluate him pretty highly, but I wonder if they do as well. You would think they would.
How could they not? I mean, there aren't 10 guys at his position better. In fact, he's fringe top 5 probably in the National Football League. How many players can you say on this team are maybe a top 5 player in the NFL at their position? Cosmi comes to mind. I think Tressway, you could probably say that about. Anybody else?
No.
There was a time maybe Allen or Payne at in a career year, but I wouldn't say
Bobby Wagner was. I mean, he's a Hall of Famer, but not the second.
That's a good one. Is Bobby Wagner possibly on that list? Top 5 inside linebacker. I'd say maybe. He's probably closer than most of their players. Might be 7th or 8th at this point. But all the more reason, I think, to get this done, and hopefully they do. We're out of here at 3:10 for Nationals baseball. So we've got a final furlong with a Nats preview, and an update on everything going on in the Olympics for you next. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Want to get to an NFL extension and a discussion on when we'll get an extension for the best young commander worthy of paying in just a couple of moments. Welcome back to Grant and Danny on the Fan. I just saw this story today, though. A missing scuba diving couple was found alive after 38 hours at sea with no life vests. Think about that.
Oh, my God.
This is a crazy story. And I'm not trying to joan on these people, but it doesn't look like they're, like, the best scuba divers in the world. I mean, they look like just kind of normal people.
Just regular people.
That went scuba diving. Maybe they're pretty good at it, but they don't look like they train.
38 hours?
38 hours. I'll give you some of the details here really quickly. So, a missing scuba diving couple ended up separated from the group that they were with. Nathan and Kim Maker of Oklahoma are their names. They were part of a group of 16 people that were scuba diving off the coast of Texas. Bad weather forced everyone back to the boat. I guess they blow a whistle. They go, hey, weather's getting worse. Get back here. They're all hanging on to some type of safety line. And a huge swell comes, engulfs them, and they get knocked off the safety line. And the rest of the diving party stays on.
Oh, my God. It's like the plot of The Martian.
Pretty much. And by the way, that feeling has to be
the worst. Unimaginable.
This is how they described it. Think about the just let the anxiety set in.
Let it wash over you.
The boat was getting smaller and smaller and smaller until it was completely out of sight, Nathan told Good Morning America. Eventually, the couple found themselves in the real-life version of open water, which, if you haven't seen it, doesn't end well, apparently. But the married couple realized they were getting really cold. The water was too cold, so they had to swim to warm their body temperature. And I guess every once in a while, they would just have to swim to warm themselves up so that they didn't get too cold in the water. 38 hours went by with no life vest in the middle of the open sea.
I mean, oh my God.
Around 1 a.m. last Friday morning, Kim spotted a Coast Guard search plane that was off in the distance. Fortunately, because it was at nighttime, she was able to take out a small flashlight and began flashing SOS. Their worst fears that the plane may not have noticed them quickly went away when out of nowhere, a speedboat came and rescued them in a movie-like scenario. Just out of the corner of our eyes, this speedboat comes streaming in, and all of a sudden, I can hear the voices of Coast Guard guys.
First of all, oh my God. Second of all, you know how to do SOS?
Of course not. But if I was out in the water,
you might learn
with scuba diving people, 16 at a time. You probably that might come up in the lessons at some point.
I mean, forever ago, I was in Hawaii with my dad, and we went snorkeling for almost 10 seconds. I didn't know where the group was. That's the most scared I've ever been.
That is petrifying.
They were just around the corner of this one rock, but like it was, I was like, oh my God, open water. This is it. I'm going to be food for the barracudas.
Not really related, but yeah. I'll try to top that for a second, if I may. We took our kids to a little like petting zoo place. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter. There was like 3 minutes total where I didn't know where my daughter was. And I became Hugh Jackman in Prisoners. I was just running around screaming at people. And she just didn't tell us and like walked one like playground over. And it was like going down a slide.
Mm-hmm.
But I just like went and positioned myself at the front door, like no one's leaving with her, you know? And I was going crazy. My wife was like very calm and like, please relax. She's right around here somewhere. I was losing it.
Yeah.
Heart beating out of my chest.
Now do that in the ocean.
Exactly.
For 2 days.
38 hours. Are you kidding me?
Can you imagine?
So tip of the cap. When I saw a picture of these people, again, I'm not trying to joan. But they kind of look like me.
Well, I'm saying they're not like, that's not like world-class Jacques Cousteau, I live in the water type folks. They're just like, this is a cool thing we're doing on vacation. What?
Unfathomable. All right. Extensions. DJ Moore got paid. He got over $100 million from the Bears. They lock him up. He's the latest guy to get an extension. And the Patriots, again, they have spent the entire offseason paying their own. The Patriots have made deals with now 8 different players in-house that they've locked up since the start of the offseason, which is pretty incredible. And tip of the cap to that front office to evaluate the guys you want to keep and then throw money at them. Moore, 4 years, $110 million, $82.6 million in guarantees. I ask you, Danny, where's our Sam Cosmi deal? And do you think he gets one before the start of the season? By all accounts, he's become one of the best guards in football. He has now played 3 years going into his fourth and final year of his contract. So if they want to lock him up tonight, they could do it. He's 25. I feel like the sooner the better because he's only going to be getting more and more credit around the league now. He's in the cool club. I'm not really sure what we're waiting for. They got a lot of money this year. They've got plenty of money in the future, very little on the books beyond this season. It seems like they're a prime candidate to lock up a player, and Cosmi's waiting in the wings.
Yeah, I'm wondering, because I haven't heard word one about it. Like, the only people that I've heard mention this are us. Now, maybe someone else has talked about it, and they deserve credit for it, but I don't know. I wonder what this group thinks of him. You know what I mean? Because I know he was the previous regimes. I value him pretty highly, but I wonder if they do as well. You would think they would.
How could they not? I mean, there aren't 10 guys at his position better. In fact, he's fringe top five probably in the National Football League. How many players can you say on this team are maybe a top five player in the NFL at their position? Cosme comes to mind. I think Tressway, you could probably say that about. Anybody else?
No.
There was a time, maybe Allen or Payne at, you know, in a career year, but I wouldn't
Bobby
say
Bobby Wagner was. I mean, he's a Hall of Famer, but not so, the
that's
second.
That's a good one. Is Bobby Wagner possibly on that list? Top five inside linebacker. I'd say maybe. He's probably closer than most of their players. Might be seventh or eighth at this point. But all the more reason, I think, to get this done, and hopefully they do. We're out of here at 3:10 for Nationals baseball. So we've got a final furlong with a Nats preview and an update on everything going on in the Olympics for you next. Grant and Danny on the Fan.